ऐसी मशीन लगाऊंगा, इस साइड से आलू घुसेगा, उस साइड से सोना निकलेगा।
Hello everyone and welcome to this edition of the Attention Please podcast on video. So this is again going to be one of those episodes where I'm going to be struggling whether to look up at the camera or to look at it myself. So, and I'm going to struggle with my hair too. So once we've gotten that out of the way, the topic for today is India's defeat at Headingley. Now, many of you are going to look at me and say, well, where was this guy when we were winning in Lords? Why is there a need for an episode on Indian cricket just after we have lost? Does this person have nothing better to do than to troll the Indian cricket team? Well, that's a good point. And especially as a child of the 90s, I should be the last one who should be complaining really about India's performance on tours, especially to Sena countries. We are living in the renaissance of Indian test cricket. And there's nothing that has happened in this series which kind of undermines that fact. We are 1-1. We should have been 2-1 if the weather had gone our way. And this is far better. This is a far better situation than I can remember when Vikram Rathore wasn't the coach, but he was our batsman. And for those of you who have seen Vikram Rathore bat, it's a sight which is even worse than trying to see Sunil Shetty act. And I mean this in all seriousness. He was a terrible batsman. It perhaps says something that even a terrible batsman can possibly be a possibly good coach. I don't know. Those who do not cannot practice usually teach. But whatever it is, I should be the last person, people of my generation should be the last persons to complain about an Indian cricket team which is light years ahead of what they used to be. But still, as an Indian cricket fan, I still think that I have the right to complain as an Indian because, you know, that's what we do. So here it is. Here is the next few minutes of sheer negativity. So first of all, let's first, you know, say kudos to England. They made a remarkable comeback. And this is something which we often forget when we are being fanatics, is that the other team that also exists. And it's not just a question of whether our team plays badly or plays well. It's also the other team. And England just turned up much better than they did in Lords. And I think the most important thing, besides, and we're going to come to the Indian collapse, is that England had a good opening partnership. For the first time, and even in the test series that they had in India, they just didn't have an opening partnership of any significance. So here, this was the first time, at least in as long as I can remember, that England have had a very, very significant opening partnership. And especially in test matches like this, where it's not that the bat is totally dominating over the ball. There is always something in the pitch for the bowlers. It is just, this is match winning to have a good opening partnership. Because what it does is that it dulls the new ball. So wickets will always fall to the new ball in a pitch like Headingley. And if the opening batsman can get through 25, 30, 50 overs and not lose their wicket and then go on to build a 100-run partnership, that itself sets the game up for the rest of the batting side. And it's so very important, the role of opening partnerships. And England just got that right, while we kind of didn't. And so, you know, kudos to the England team. I also think that they were helped to a large extent by a very, very bad opening spell from Ishant Sharma. Now, Ishant Sharma has had, you know, a great second half of his career. I mean, he had a sensational start in Australia where he sounded the death knell for Ricky Ponting's career in that test match. And then over the years, there was a definite dip in his performance till we thought that Ishant Sharma had joined the kind of the dust heap of pace bowlers, you know, keeping company with RP Singh. But then he had this comeback, this amazing comeback, almost like Mahinder Amarnath in nature, in the sense that he, for quite a few years now, he's been one of India's leading test bowlers. And, you know, he's his great seam position, he uses his height, And he usually is very good with the new ball. But maybe this test in Headingley might have been his last test, might have been the last time that we will see Ishant. I don't think, and again, I could be wrong, and it could be that because of injury that he plays the next test. But I think that he was just off the boil. And if there was anything which I would blame Kohli for, is that Kohli should have realized it once he saw that things were not going the way planned. And his bowling was, again, I'm not an expert at that level, but he really, really, really looked off the boil. And which was, he was using the ball at a time when every delivery was significant because of the overhead conditions. The first day was the best for bowlers. And that was, I think, what cost us the match. And it's kind of harsh to say that a session costs anybody the match, especially in a test match where, I mean, that's the thing about a test match, is that you have multiple sessions in which you can come back. And India kind of did come back once or twice, but they basically never did. In the Headingley, it was pretty one-sided if you look at it in retrospect. But I think that Ishant Sharma was responsible. And it's too much to expect. I mean, Ishant is getting on in years. And I think there are quite a few good options now that Ishant Sharma can now be retired. And I think he's served India well, especially in his second incarnation. But I just felt that he just wasn't there. And I think that cost us. Now, I read an article by Mukul Kesavan, who writes regularly in Telegraph, which is he's either criticizing Kohli or he's criticizing Narendra Modi, sometimes both together and sometimes both together at the same time. So his contention was, again, that, of course, Kohli is a terrible captain. I mean, that's a persistent theme. And we'll come to Kohli later on, of course. I'm not going to disagree, I'm not going to agree with him on what he said, which was that Ashwin should have played. That, you know, Kohli has this fetish towards pace bowling. And, of course, he links it to Kohli's personal character, that, you know, he likes that macho thing about, you know, four pace bowlers like West Indies. And that his refusal to play Ashwin was more based on his personal character than cricketing acumen. This, of course, is vastly overreaching. And this kind of speaks to having kind of a personal animus for the captain. There was, at least in my opinion, there was no reason why Ashwin should have played this game. I mean, there was only room for one spinner on that track. And we just saw in the test match against New Zealand, why you need four pace bowlers on English pitches. And just think of it, with Ishant Sharma having an off day where you cannot bowl Ishant Sharma, if you have three pace bowlers, what the problem becomes, especially when the other side is scoring like in the 450s. So it was actually, even in retrospect, and this old chestnut, so, but England has so many left-handers. This is you know, very trite. Just because, you know, side has a large number of left-handers doesn't necessarily mean that you should be playing an off-spinner. It just depends on the pitch. And the pitch, I felt, was not a pitch in which you could play Ashwin. There was only a place for one spinner. And you can say, well, he should have played in place of Jadeja. But Jadeja brings to the side much more than just being a spinner. He's definitely improved his batting over the years. So he brings the batting, he brings his fielding, and he brings this overall spring in the step. And Ashwin is a fielder who has to be hidden. And that possibly is perhaps some bigger reason why Kohli does not like playing him, because Ashwin is not a very good fielder, while Jadeja is. I think that kind of more tips the scale in favor of Jadeja than anything else. The fact that over 5 days, you need somebody who's electric in the field, and Jadeja is by far the best fielder that India has. And he just brings a lot more to, and because this is in England, of course, if this was in India, we would have been playing Akshar Patel also. You would have been going with three spinners. And that's really the strength of India. That's really been why India has had such a great time in the test arena of late, is that we always had a decent enough, spinning track. I mean, if we got a spinning track, we had a decent spin attack always, whether it was Kumble, Rajesh Chauhan, Raju, even down to Nilesh Kulkarni. We could put three test class spinners at any point of time, but we could not put three or four test class fast bowlers till now. Now we have about five or six, perhaps even more, international class, top class fast bowlers who can be attacking options in Test cricket. This is what has made the difference in India's cricketing fortune. And why Kohli should not go with the greatest strength is, of course, something that only Mr. Mukul Kesavan can tell us. So I have no idea why Ashwin should have played. There was actually no reason. And even the pitch over the days, it didn't become like a spinner's heaven at any point of time. So, but what actually came out in this test was one of India's very old weaknesses, but something that we just cannot seem to get rid of, which is the collapse. And for those of us who have been following Indian cricket for decades, and I kind of give up my age, which is significant, we've always seen this Indian collapse. And the most recent collapse was in Adelaide. And why does this happen? And this happens if you compare this Indian side to, let's say, the best of Australia. And the best of West Indies, they didn't have these kind of collapses. There was at least one batsman with a bowler who would, on the days of a collapse, they would fight back. They would create a partnership. And that's, again, one of the things that distinguishes our world number one side. Of course, which India isn't. They lost it to New Zealand. But you could have said that India could have been world number one. But that's what distinguishes a world number one test side from the rest, that everybody will have bad days. But, and this is what makes a test, is that you just cannot have the entire batting just folding up because the opponent team is having a good session with the ball. England had a good session with the ball, just like Australia had a good session with the ball in Adelaide. But, you know, getting shot out for below 100, whether it is be 36 or 75, this is definitely not something which shows that India is a number one test side. This is, again, something that a number one test side should not habitually be doing. And India does this again and again. Even in the second innings, there was somewhat of a collapse at the end. But, you know, on a day like this, that was still okay. So basically, India lost the game on the first day of the test itself. So why does this happen? I think, again, it's very difficult. And honestly, I don't know that much about cricket or have that level of analytics to say why this happens to India and doesn't, let's say, happen to England. But I think one of the reasons could be, you know, this is again where it's that most Indian players are not, and this is psychology, I think. This is the mental aspect of the game, that one-day cricket and T20 cricket focus purely on scoring runs in a less number of balls. It doesn't focus your mind to last out. So some players, for instance, Pujara is very good at lasting out, but the team as in total isn't. So they cannot last out an hour or 2 hours or a session of play. They struggle. It's not that they haven't done it. We've had great fourth innings fight backs from Ashwin, for instance, as a batsman. So this is, again, I'm generalizing here, but from what I see, and we've seen this in quick succession, these kinds of dramatic Indian batting collapses, the world number one team or world number two team just shouldn't be doing this. And the pitch wasn't that bad because the other side went ahead and made almost 400 runs. So it wasn't a state of the pitch. It was basically a mind thing, I believe. Now, which brings us to, you know, the actual problem with the Indian cricket team as of now. And for those of you who listen to my podcast, this is nothing new. It's that it's really time for Virat Kohli to give up his captaincy. It's also time for Ravi Shastri to step down. And both have to happen at the same time. Virat Kohli, the thing is that, and this has been a problem with Virat from time immemorial. The fact is that you cannot have the leader of the team, you know, picking fights with everybody, shouting, teri maa ki, teri behen ki, at all points of time. Now, there was a time when Virat Kohli first came onto the national stage. And it was amazing to see, you know, this guy scoring centuries, being in the form of his life, you know, having everything, endorsement deals, you know, the number one Indian batsman, and then always being angry. And angry in a nasty, abusive way. people will say, well, what about Ganguly? Ganguly wasn't abusive. What Ganguly brought to the side was that he gave back the needle that other teams gave India, but he didn't go and, you know, do Ma Behen. There's a distinction between, you know, calling somebody an old man, you know, getting personal to the extent that Virat Kohli does. And so this is not just a moral failing of Virat Kohli. This is just simply unacceptable coming from the leader of a side. Now, imagine if you're working in, you know, you're working in a corporate environment and, you know, you're working in software and IT, and your team lead, your engineering manager, you know, the best guy, the chief architect, every day he comes in and he starts going Ma Behen whenever there's a problem. You know, he punches his fist, he throws coffee all over the conference room, he breaks chairs. But he's very good, of course, everybody knows that. But he does that. And the logic for that, and you go to the manager, you go to the director, who's Ravi Shastri, and he says, well, that he's expressing himself. That's how he needs to pump himself up. You know, no company, no HR will allow that. It doesn't matter how good a player or how good a coder Virat Kohli is or how good a manager he is. He just won't keep his job. And this is similar in cricket. I mean, cricket isn't a game. It's a corporate endeavor. And Kohli just doesn't look like it. He doesn't look, and compare him. And I'm not just talking about his batting, and I'm coming to that, but compare him to his contemporaries. Compare him to Babar Azam. Okay. Guy never loses his cool. Okay. And I've seen some games of Pakistan. Never loses his cool. Very cool guy. Comparing him to Williamson. Compare him to Root. Compare him to Smith, maybe, but Smith doesn't abuse. I mean, Smith does other shady things. You know, he has brain fades. And he's, I think among all the other greats, he's possibly the closest to Kohli in terms of his volatility. But his volatility, again, is expressed in something, in a form which is, I think, a little bit more acceptable than the way Kohli expresses his volatility. So if you compare him with his contemporaries, you'll see that there is something which is just not right with the way he comes across. And there's obviously the thing, and the larger thing which people have pointed out, is that when impressionable young minds watch Indian cricket, I mean, when I was impressionable, and this is absolutely true, whether I realized it or not, but, you know, cricketers and movie stars are our role models. And somebody would say, why? But it just happens to be. And especially more cricketers, because they're sports people. And movie stars, you always tend to like, theek hai, chalo, movie. But sports cricketers, there are definitely people who make an impression, not just in terms of their personal character, but also in terms of how the game should be played. So what Virat Kohli does is he's kind of normalizing a kind of behavior in the field of cricket as well as in our work. That, you know, as long as you're good, as long as you're winning, if you need to be abusive, then so be it. You need to, quote unquote, express yourself, to use Ravi Shastri's favorite words. And if that pumps you up, if that gets you performing at your peak level, then that itself justifies this kind of terrible behavior. And this is exactly what impressionable young minds imbibe, that this is the way the world works. Now, I've said this before, and what has changed from now is that Kohli is not performing either. So before that, you could still justify this by saying, look, this guy consistently scores centuries. And yeah, sure, he's not, you know, he won't win Mr. Congeniality, but he performs. And who cares, as long as we are winning? And in a winner, in a world where winning is the only thing that matters, and it does, and to an extent, I still get it. I'm not comfortable with it, but I get it. But that too is gone. I mean, Kohli's performance has been terrible. He's just scored a 50. I read somewhere that he hasn't scored a 50 in the last 50 matches. Now, I don't know, last 50 international innings. Now, I don't know how true that is. I didn't validate that data. But at least from my memory, Kohli's batting has been terrible. I mean, nowadays, if he gets 50 runs, his fans all go crazy and say, well, he scored 50 runs. And forget being the leading batsman in the team. Forget being the captain. Forget being the best batsman in the world. A test match batsman does not deserve a place in the team if he is scoring 50 runs every, let's say, five test matches. This is just not, no, nobody can maintain their place in the team, especially with the standards that we want to set in the Indian Test team. And people will say, and I saw, of course, you know, Kohli sympathetic media saying, look, you know, look how great a leader Kohli is. Even when he's not performing, his Josh and Junoon remains the same. He's still engaged. But that's really that. I don't quite see it that way. As a matter of fact, bad behavior gets worse when you're not performing. That's the truth. So I don't see that as a credit to Kohli. I just see that as a validation of the fundamental flaw in the kind of a person that he is, unfortunately. So what is happening now is that he ultimately is becoming like a Darren Sammy kind of a captain. You know, for those of you who don't remember, Darren Sammy used to, you know, he used to bat at number 8 for the West Indies team and he didn't bowl. And his main job was to cheer everybody up. You know, he was basically management in the sense that you never saw him. He was in the field. And sometimes at the very end, he would perhaps come down to bat at number 8 or number 9, maybe hit a 6 or give the strike to somebody else who would then hit the strike and hit a 6 because the West Indies T20 side was amazing. So, but he basically rode that, the performance of the individual contributors to become a legend. And it was a joke. At least for me, Darren Sammy was always a joke. And I never thought that I would be putting Virat Kohli and Darren Sammy in the same sentence. But that's unfortunately where things have landed up at this point of time. Now, maybe Virat Kohli will come back in this series, but whatever it is, if you just look at the first 3 tests and if you look at the what has happened before, Virat Kohli's performance has just been terrible. And if at all anything, this should be the wake-up call. Again, his career isn't finished by any stretch of imagination. Even the best have bad patches. And, you know, I've always been a huge fan of Virat Kohli as a batsman, not as a person, not as a personality, but as a batsman. Yes, I love watching him bat when he's at his best. Again, when I say he dominates bowlers, I don't mean that he mabahens them. I mean that when he is silent and he's using his bat to dominate, there is no greater sight than Virat Kohli in full flow. So I want Virat Kohli back as the way I remember him and the way I believe he can bat. Out of all the 5 or 6, and this may be the Indian fan in me speaking, I've always considered him to be the best among all of them, but I cannot. At what he has become at this point of time, there is no doubt that he's not even worth putting in that bracket of Babar, Williams and Root and Smith at this point of time. And if you look at Root, especially when you look at his opposite numbers, I mean, he kind of shows up Virat in as bad a way as possible, because here's Root, who I think among that group is possibly the least talented of them. At least that's my opinion. For me, after Kohli, I would put Babar Azam in terms of raw talent. And then I would perhaps put, you know, Williamson and Smith. It's very difficult to compare. But if you look at Root, who's possibly the least naturally talented among this group, you would see that he just gets by. He doesn't talk. He's a very silent kind of a guy, but he just gets by on the strength of his character. And Kohli, I think he just lets it all out. He just doesn't internalize. And as I've grown older, you know, when I was younger, I used to make fun of these things. You know, these are what, you know, Buddha people say. But now when I'm a Buddha person myself, I realize that that there's something to it. When things go wrong, and again, things go wrong with me, that things go wrong with you, it's the only way you can get out of things when they go wrong is not to get yourself agitated. I mean, it happens. The agitation happens. You feel the anger, you feel it rising. But an effective person is somebody who gets it in control, who realizes that, look, I just need to bat out this session and I will get to where I just need to last this session. And Kohli, this the attitude that he has, I think that is letting him down. I don't think it's his technique. At his level, at his class level, it's not a question of technique. Technique doesn't go away. There may be minor things that happen, I know. But it's all in the mind. And I think that this is a time that, and this brings me to the Ravi Shastri. I've never really had much of respect for him. Even, I mean, he's definitely had a if you look at his numbers, he's not won ICC tournaments for us, but that's not the only parameter for judging somebody's contribution to Indian cricket. So in terms of his results, he's definitely delivered, but the cost at which he delivered. See, the reason why you need a manager or you need a coach isn't because, you know, that you actually coach. Even the word coach, you don't need a batting coach. I mean, Vikram Rathod is the last person who could be coaching, let's say, a Virat Kohli or a Rohit Sharma, right? So, you know, even with calling him a batting coach or calling Bharati Arun a bowling coach for a Bumrah, you know, it makes no sense, but they do provide a lot of value, right? I mean, that's why you have coaches. It's not that they're teaching them. The word coach kind of implies that they're teaching them. But the reason why you have batting coaches, managers is to provide a perspective to these really, really valuable individual contributors. So this is true for cricket, as well as it's true for, I would say, the software technology sector, where you have superstars, you have people who are great architects, great coders, great testers, great optimizers, but yet you need a layer of management over them, not because the managers know better than these people, they obviously don't, but they're needed in order to provide a kind of oversight and management for them, to be able to balance things out. Because when you are a high-performing individual, whether it be, I mean, any person who makes it to the Indian test side is a high-performing individual. But because they're under so much stress, because they're so much focused on their own individual performance, it requires somebody to tell them truths that they don't want to hear. This is what a good manager does. And of course, again, we know that there's this concept of a shit sandwich where, you know, you want to say something bad to somebody. So you say something good, you then say the bad thing, and then you say a good thing. Whatever it is, whatever Shastri's management style is, or whatever the coach's management style is, that is the reason why coaches exist, to say or provide feedback that they normally will not get from anywhere else. And this is where Ravi Shastri has been the biggest failure. And this actually stems from Kohli. The fact is, Kohli is somebody who is so insecure. And that insecurity is so obvious that he just does not want anybody to say that he is wrong, that, you know, he needs to change things. So he's repeatedly resisted the hiring of a coach who has the standing, like Anil Kumble. We saw what he did with Anil Kumble, because again, Anil Kumble was not somebody who could be bullied like a Vikram Rathod can, because Vikram Rathod has no standing, right? Or in this case, Ravi Shastri. So he is very, very, doesn't want to deal with strong authority figures. He just wants to be the only authority figure in the side. And again, all of this was fine as long as India was winning and as long as his performance was way above what the average was. But now it isn't. Now his average is below, while his performance is below the average. And this is the time when you have to say, and it's a boss, it's not working anymore. Okay, we gave you your time. We gave you the time to express yourself. And now it's time to look at things in a different way. And I think with Kohli, it's important that he be given the time to get his batting back on track. I think with captaincy, it's just very difficult. This comes back to Greg Chappell. I mean, this is a sore point among Indian fans and Bengalis, of course, and everything. But again, at that point of time, I'd said this. It's not that Ganguly didn't deserve to lose his captaincy. He did. He was in a batting rut and he deserved to lose his captaincy. He didn't deserve to lose his space in the side. He didn't deserve the humiliation that he was put through. That he didn't deserve. But yeah, definitely he deserved to have the captaincy taken away from him. I mean, the captaincy isn't a right for anyone. And a captaincy is something which is given to someone. As long as they're performing, they're doing their job as an individual contributor. And they're one of the best individual contributors. And this comes to another thing about Kohli. Is that, see, when he was young and when he came to the side, you could understand a bit of the verbals. You could understand that, you know, there is this, you know, young guy who's a little aggressive. But that guy doesn't then become the captain. You see, this is the reason why, you know, you would find very aggressive seam bowlers and very aggressive bowlers. This is one of the reasons why bowlers have never been made captains, because of that aggressiveness that's natural in bowlers. This is the reason why Shane Warne, for instance, was never made a captain. He did never like the fact, but this was the reason. Because even by Australian standards, he was seen to be very, very aggressive. And this is okay for a pace bowler. And for a bowler, you understand when you're coming in, steaming in at 140 or like Shane Warne, you're bowling for like hours on end in a game which is dominated by batsmen where the rules are against you, frustration is inevitable. And you let the steam out. That's perfectly fine. But Kohli is the person who is, if you're the captain, you don't get to take your steam out in front of the public. This is where you have to go back and look at how Mahendra Singh Dhoni conducted himself. Because Mahendra Singh Dhoni was not a person who also was particularly respectful of contrarian opinion. For those of you who remember his press conferences, you know, his basic thing was, if you can't play test cricket, then don't criticize me. So it was not that he was particularly open to criticism either. But at least on the, at least when he was playing, he did not come across. Whatever he had, he kept it inside. And that's all that matters, really. It doesn't necessarily mean that you have to be particularly open to criticism or particularly happy. This is true of cricket as well as your work. But the fact is, you're paid to keep it bottled inside. And Kohli just doesn't do it. And he's not asked to do it. He's not asked to do it by his manager. And which brings me to Saurav Ganguly. Ultimately, my expectation was that that's why you have a hierarchy. And I expected more from Saurav Ganguly to rein in Ravi Shastri and through him to rein in Virat Kohli. And I understand that there is a lot of financial and corporate pressure. I mean, Virat Kohli, whatever you do, whatever you might have to say with respect to his runs or his effectiveness as a captain or a batsman, he's done a great job in selling products. That's definite. And, changing the way we celebrate our festivals, I think he's been particularly effective in that. And of course, I'm being facetious here and I'm a little angry at Virat Kohli because of various reasons. And this is me expressing myself. So Ravi Shastri and Virat Kohli, if it's good for you, it's good for me too. But I think this is a time when Kohli needs to go. I'm not saying let the series be over. I think we know that Ravi Shastri is on his way out. And it's time that once Ravi Shastri is on his way out, then there's a different leadership team in the Indian side. I think India, and who should that leader be? Again, given the fact that, nobody's really covered themselves in glory, I would still say that it has to go to Ajinkya Rahane. Because Ajinkya Rahane has showed results. I think that he is. It's not that he doesn't deserve his place in the side. He does deserve his place in the side. So it'll possibly be Ajinkya Rahane or it'll be Rohit Sharma, which I'm a little scared of for test matches. But I don't think there's anybody else. I don't think he's going to go to KL Rahul or anybody else. I would have wished it would have gone to, people thought out of the box and thought about somebody like Bumrah, for instance. But I know that's not going to happen. The captain will normally be a batsman. But again, there should be a communication with Kohli. He should be told that, look, this is, we're going to give it to Rahane at this point of time. You kind of get in, you basically come back to your average. And again, Virat Kohli's average is still pretty okay, which just goes to tell you that, what a great batsman he actually is, that even with this dip of form, his numbers only go like this because of the strength of what he's accomplished before. So this rant should not be taken as an, me being anti-Virat, and I possibly am going to get comments. This is not. I've always been a huge fan of him. I've also supported some of his, as I said, I just supported his decision of not going with Ashwin. So I think in terms of tactical mistakes, I don't think he makes a lot of tactical mistakes. I mean, there's decisions and, hindsight is always 20-20. But I think his biggest failing is the way he comes across on the field, which I just believe is unacceptable. This is not the way a captain should behave, not when they're winning, not when they're losing. And I think that ultimately, because of this, it kind of dulls the mental edge that's needed in order to consistently perform at the highest level. So that's the podcast for today. Please do subscribe to this channel and like this video, because unless you do this, of course, it's again, as I said, it's good for my ego. But if you don't subscribe, if you don't like, then the YouTube algorithms don't pick this up. The reason why I am subjecting myself and you to my face is that I want this podcast to have greater reach. And that is not going to be possible until and unless you like, this video and subscribe to this channel. So please do that. Thank you, and I will hopefully see you next week. Bye-bye.